You're listening to PetLifeRadio.com.
Is your pet stressed out? Does your pet need annual vaccines? Which pet is best for a child? Would you know if your dog was in pain? Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor, where you'll learn everything about keeping your pet healthy and happy. From pet care, pet meds and grooming, to pet food, pet insurance and dental care, this is the place to find out everything there is to know about pet wellness. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile, or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets, because it's your pet. Health matters. Please welcome your Pet Doctor host, veterinary media consultant and veterinarian, Dr. Bernadine Cruz.
Some people believe that a rabbit's foot is good luck. Alina was skeptical. Born with a congenital disorder that left her paralyzed from the waist down, not even two rabbit's feet was doing her any good. That was until she met some very inventive and creative people at the premier rehabilitation hospital for children in Israel, Alin. Now, Alina is helping other patients at this facility. And oh, did I mention, Alina is a rabbit. We'll be right back after this short break to talk to Kathy Lanyard about this wonderful hospital and this great little rabbit.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
Be sure to tune in when Pet Life Radio goes live from Global Pet Expo, the world's largest annual pet products trade show. March 25th through the 27th, you can catch all the new products coming out for our pets before they even hit store shelves. From the latest in all-natural and eco-friendly products to the most elegant in pet pampering and high-tech innovations from companies all over the globe, it's at Global Pet Expo. Nearly 800 companies will be displaying new and exciting products to make time with our pets even better. Tune in March 25th through the 27th for everything Global Pet Expo.
It's time for school for you and your friends, your furry best friends. Train your dog the fun and easy way with Teacher's Pet Sessions. Teacher's Pet host Pia Silvani teaches you step by step how to train your dog the fun and easy way. You get 8 30-minute live audio training sessions, complete transcripts of each session, plus a basic training manual to get you and your dog off to a great start. Training begins the moment you bring your dog home. Teacher's Pet Sessions offers positive reinforcement training to shape your dog's behavior and encourages upbeat, enthusiastic responses to ensure that your dog will enjoy learning. Teacher's Pet Sessions dog training is fun at both ends of the leash. So listen, learn, and laugh with your dog with Teacher's Pet Sessions. Get your copy of Teacher's Pet Sessions Volume 1 today. To order, go to teacherspetsessions.com.
Hi, this is Pia Silvani, your host. Bring your dog, tug toy, and treats, and get ready to have some fun.
teacherspetsessions.com.
Thinking about buying a monkey? How about a ferret or a skunk? Then check out the show that will answer the burning questions: where do you get them? What do you feed them? How do you take care of them? And most of all, what were you thinking? With exotic pet expert and author Bob Tart, every week on demand from PetLifeRadio.com. Let's talk pets on PetLifeRadio.com. Welcome back to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio with Dr. Bernadine Cruz. The doctor is in, and we'll see you now.
Kathy, thank you so much for being with us today. I understand you describe yourself as being a nonprofit diva who's savvy, has moxie and heart, and is a professional beggar. Tell us a little bit about this great hospital.
Oh, it is a great hospital. Thank you so much for talking to me today. We are what I call a very well-kept secret. Alin Hospital is, from American perspective, not a hospital at all. It's a very comprehensive rehabilitation center. But they use the title Hospital in Israel so that people understand that there is a very serious medical component to the work we do. We take care of children, age birth to young adults, who have physical disabilities. That's our B beginning entry requirement. They can be from the most minor to quite severe, requiring wheelchairs and respirators. We see everything in between.
Are these only Jewish children, Kathy?
Oh, no. Oh, no. As a matter of fact, my New Year's Eve gift was to open up the New York Times and see on the cover a story about 2 8-year-olds who met at a Lynn hospital and against all odds have befriended each other, an 8-year-old Muslim girl and an 8-year-old Jewish boy. So we see children, regardless of their religion, of their ethnicity, of their race, they just have to have a physical disability and need the kind of expertise we have to help them.
And are all these children Israeli, or do parents throughout the world send their children there?
Most of our patients are Israeli. Most live in, I would say, within an hour or two of Jerusalem, which is where Alin is located. Children do come, though, from other parts of the Middle East as well, and we have had patients from abroad. I have been there once when I've seen a little girl who came from Paris. I've also seen children from the U.S. there, but it's certainly not a local stop for anybody living here. I wish it were, because the things that go on there are just so amazing.
What makes this facility different than, you say, it's not a typical hospital? What are they doing? Well, maybe we should back up. So, Alina, this little rabbit. Why do you have a rabbit there?
You know, it's so funny about it. This rabbit has become very famous now. And I go once a year to Israel and spend about 2 weeks there. And years ago, I would go more often, but, you know, between fax and email and Skype and all of that, I'm in touch with them all day long. So once a year is enough for me to actually see hands-on, you know, what's gone on in the last year. So I go in November, and my counterpart there, the very first thing we do is, you know, like an update, what's new? And she says to me, I have to show you this amazing little rabbit that we built a brace for. And I'm a very typical New Yorker, I have to tell you. And I said, you did a what for a what?
And how much did this cost?
Right. And you're treating rabbits now? What are you, people out of your mind? You don't have enough. And the whole thing just struck me. And I guess, as I said, I am a cynical metropolitan person. It struck me as so absurd that why would we even be involved with this? But then I went to our therapeutic animal center and saw this little Alina in action and heard the whole story from the beginning to the end. And really now I don't even need to know. I mean, I will tell you the story because it's interesting. But what's most interesting is if I can paint with words for you what I saw, which is that we have a therapist there, and she had a rabbit who gave birth to a rabbit who was a paraplegic. The back legs were paralyzed. Now, I'll be honest, I'm not a big animal person. I don't know all that much about, you know, pets. I had to do a little research and ask a lot of questions, but it turns out that normally the lifespan of such a rabbit would be very diminished, because in the animal world, the mothers would, it's the opposite, I guess, of what a human mother would do, which was show favoritism, you know, for the sicker of the children. In the animal world, it's the opposite, because I guess they believe in natural selection.
I only have so many resources as mommy bunny, and you are not going to make it in the world, so you're going to bunny heaven, yes.
Exactly, but for reasons that nobody will ever know, this bunny mother favored this one rabbit. And she didn't die when the litter was born. And because the human mother was a therapist and works at Alin, she asked the person who's responsible for our braces and therapy, you know, do you think something could be done for this rabbit? And that's how the rabbit came to us. And the rabbit was then named Alina. After us, it was basically Alin or Aline, however you pronounce it, hospital, threw an A on the end. And that's how this adorable little rabbit got its name. And what they did was they took a piece of board and built a brace so that the rabbit is more or less with these Velcro straps attached to the brace and to this board by this brace. And under the board are these very tiny wheels. By immobilizing yet putting on wheels, the part of her body that doesn't move and was, quote, dead weight, it freed up the power of her front legs.
So she has a little skateboard to get around.
More or less. The fascinating thing how this relates to our kids is, while it's not a therapeutic brace, per se, that's on this rabbit, from a 2 or 3 year old's or 4 or 5 year old's perspective, it looks to them very much like what we use, which is called an RGO brace, which is a very serious therapeutic tool. And it's a brace that is for children who have upper body mobility but have either diminished or no lower body movement. And it's, you know, to a novice, it looks very much like a contraption. It's these stiff leg braces attached to like a belt almost. You know, it goes around the whole waist. And the way it's designed is if there's some upper body movement, a child with that who has some lower body movement, the brace helps them move swifter, more evenly, without falling. And in some cases, it can actually give a child who is paralyzed the feeling of movement. It's totally amazing to see in action. But of course, most kids, you know, don't want to even put the brace on. And that's where Alina comes into the picture, because part of what we have incorporated into our very unusual daycare center is now the care of Alina. So when one of our daycare classes comes in, you know, now it's a little fight between them who gets to put the brace on Alina.
Is Alina the only therapy pet that
they
have?
She is our only paraplegic rabbit. She's actually the only disabled animal we have.
Do you have other therapy animals there?
Yes. We have cockatiels. We have guinea pigs. We have what's called a hen pen, which is, I call it a miniature hen. We've got some turtles. And the animals, for therapeutic reasons to begin with, are absolutely amazing. I mean, I have been there and seen a child who comes to us not from a congenital disease or, you know, what you think of like a severe break or something that causes paralysis, but this happened to be a little boy who survived a very severe fire, and his arms were so badly burned that he just stopped using them because it was too painful. And as part of his healing, he had to have rehab. He was lucky enough that his parents brought him to rehab because we're teaching him to reuse his arms. So, of course, he sits there. He's got these horrible bandages. You can see. You don't have to see the wounds to know that this little child is hurting. And part of his exercise, he's got to learn to raise his arms, and he's staunchly not going to do it. But if you put a cockatiel in front of him with colors who's cooing at him, and, you know, you put some food in this little boy's hands, before he knows it, he's lifted his arm up to feed the bird. And he forgot how much his arms hurt. So that, that's what we were normally doing. And now with Alina, we are getting kids who have been reluctant to put a brace on, who are reluctant to do a therapy or getting therapy because they are so entranced by her. I mean, what child can resist a soft little bunny rabbit?
They are very special. And you sent me pictures, and we'll have it on our website, of this Alina. And she is just a dear. And she's going, oh, my goodness,
oh my God.
How can a child?
I have a new picture I'll send you. So I think when you ask me what makes this place special, I think what captivated me the first time I was there was that you could go any place. Any place can have state-of-the-art equipment. You know, that's just a matter of knowing what to buy and having raised enough money to buy it. I think the combination of having this unbelievable staff that we have there that are so devoted to every single kid, to have them, the belief of our medical director that the way to go is one-on-one care, the idea that the families are involved in everything, and the combination of just out of the box, which I know it's an overused expression, but maybe out of the bunny rabbit box, thinking, combined with state-of-the-art technology, when all of these things are rolled up in one, the results are really quite dramatic, I have to tell you. And the idea that we have kids, like the child who was burned, that child will make a total recovery. It may be a long road. A child who's paralyzed is not, we can't cure that. You know, we can't take away the paralysis. But there are things that are done at a limb that at least get that child to the absolute highest possible level of mobility with whatever combination of devices and therapy, and mostly the empowering of the family to not be afraid of a child's disabilities. And that's what wins me over. Every time I'm there, I am reinvigorated, recharged, because I see it all over again.
Are there other hospitals like ALIND throughout the world, or is this a very unique, specialized facility?
It's very unique and specialized. I think there are facilities everywhere who do pieces of what we do. As far as I am aware, there is no place that has absolutely everything we have in terms of, we have a daycare center with teachers, so we have a school. We have medical facilities in that we do casting and all kinds of advanced diagnostics. We have social workers. We have therapists of every kind, from animal therapy to hydrotherapy to computers, language, occupational. And we have a most unusual respiratory rehab ICU, so that a child who is totally respirator and wheelchair dependent is not languishing in a nursing home. They are in the ICU for sleep, but during the day they're getting rehab. I've never seen that before.
That sounds wonderful. If somebody wanted to learn more about ALIND, where can they go to learn more?
They could go to our website, which is alindhospital.org. And it is the American website of the American Friends of ALIND Hospital. But anything, all the hospital information is on there, in addition to links directly to the hospital in Israel. Or they could, you know, if they're old-fashioned and they have a cell phone and still call people instead of just emailing, they could call us here in New York, 212-869-8085. And we would be, whatever we can answer, we're in contact with the hospital all day, every day. Whatever we don't know, we'll find the answer to.
And what kind of help does ALIND need? And Alina?
Well, we need what everybody needs, money. Partially, we are reimbursed from health insurance, but that pays only for between 60 and 70% of every dollar of care that's provided. The shortfall, for lack of a better word, is what we raise money for. And we raise money for all medical equipment, the brace that Alina wears, the RGO I described that would be for a child with paralysis, all equipment we have to pay 100% for. That all comes from donations. Our research, our renovations, all of that is from donations. So we are, that is why I always bill myself as a very proud beggar. I am very reluctant to ever ask for anything in my own personal life. To beg on their behalf, that's an honor.
You are just a wonderful woman, and this is a great facility. Thank you for bringing it to my attention, and hopefully the listeners will also be impressed after they go to your website to help out. If they maybe want to help out an animal, and not instead of, but along with children, they have a great facility where they can do so. So thank you so much for being with us. I do appreciate it.
Oh, thank you so much.
Take care.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
This valuable information comes from your pet. There's nothing like a wagging tail or friendly paw to lift your mood. They're therapeutic and make us feel good. Studies show pets even reduce stress, prevent heart disease, lower blood pressure, and fight depression. So there you have it. Pets are a daily dose of good health and happiness. Pets add life. To learn more, visit petsaddlife.org.
How many pets is too many? Do you know somebody whose life is overwhelmed by their animals? Maybe we can help. We're looking for people to be in a new TV series about really large animal families. We can offer expert help, free resources, and the chance to tell their story. If you or someone you know owns a house full of animals, call us toll-free at 1-877-MY-8-PETS. That's 1-877-MY-8-PETS.
Greetings, human. What planet am Meyer.
Welcome to Pet Planet. Here's a copy of Pet Planet magazine, Florida's most informative and fun pet resource magazine. It features heartwarming stories and informative articles from local and national pet experts.
Excellent.
Pet Planet magazine offers Operation Planet Rescue, helping rescued pets find new homes. And it's available at 500 locations in South and Central Florida and 24/7 on the internet at PetPlanetMagazine.com. If you're out and about with your pet, you may be featured in Paparazzi, candid pictures of you and your pet. For up-to-date pet-friendly events, activities, and pet-related services and products, Pet Planet Magazine is your final destination.
I shall take this magazine home with me.
Back to your home planet?
No, to my condo in Boca.
Pet Planet Magazine. Check them out at www.petplanetmagazine.com or 352-394-8578. It's out of this world.
Hi, this is Marcy Davis and my service dog Whistle, and we're your hosts of Working Like Dogs on Pet Life Radio. Working Like Dogs is the show where you can learn everything you ever wanted to know about working animals or working dogs. Whether you're a member of a working dog team, or you've just seen a working dog or animal out at the mall or the grocery store, and you're curious about how these amazing animals work with their human partners, then Working Like Dogs is the show for you. Join us for the inside scoop at Working Like Dogs on PetLifeRadio.com.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets
on Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio with Dr. Bernadine Cruz. The doctor is in and we'll see you now.
Everyone believes that they have the most marvelous dog. They're so smart, loves everyone, and is great with people. My second guest today, Corinne Fahey of Lake Forest, California, spends a lot of time with her dog at the hospital. Now, Gus isn't ill. Gus is a certified therapy dog and helps people who are going through some woof times. Now, I thought you might like to know if your dog has the right stuff to be a therapy dog and what it involves. So, Corinne, thank you very much. You know, you're one of my clients. I'll be up front. You're one of my clients. I've known you and your dogs forever, it seems like.
Right.
And I think it's fantastic. We were just talking to a woman in the first half of the show, and she was talking about a special rehabilitation hospital, a Lynn, and they have this little paralyzed bunny who has a special brace, and the children have really bonded with this bunny and is helping the children with their therapy. Now, your dogs, thankfully, don't have any medical issues.
That's correct.
So what kind of people do Gus now, Gus and Amber, your two dogs, and what kind of dogs are they?
They're both Tibetan Terriers.
And they look like what size? I know what they are because I play with them.
Oh, okay. They're about a medium-sized dog, around 28, 29 pounds, with long hair and kind of shaggy like a small sheepdog.
Very cute. They are.
Yes, they are cute.
What made you want to become a owner of a therapy dog? Because we'll get into this. It takes a lot of work and a lot of time and effort.
Yes. Well, I had never had a Tibetan Terrier before, and my first one was almost all white and has this gorgeous coat, and people would come up to me and say, "Can I touch your dog?" And the dog was just loved it, and then someone said to me, "Did you ever think of having this dog become a therapy dog? They would be great." And I hadn't. And I got in touch with my local hospital and talked to some people, and we went in, and we had had a training. We did a little bit more training, and we got interviewed, and we became part of the program.
Now, it was many years ago when, at least here in Southern California, they started thinking of using therapy dogs, and it was Children's Hospital of Orange County. There was a major hubbub about having dogs in a hospital because they're going to shed and they're going to poop and they're going to have fleas and they're going to have diseases and they're going to lick these children and, oh my goodness, it was just going to be terrible. Now, these things really haven't come to pass, have they?
No, they haven't. We find that at Saddleback Memorial Hospital, we do have to pay attention to infectious disease control, but it's very unlikely that a patient is going to catch anything from the dog. What is more likely is the dog is used as a conduit to transfer bacteria from one patient to another. So there's a lot of hand washing, and if a dog goes on the bed, there's a towel on the bed or a sheet or a towel on the chair, and then hand washing again. And it seems sometimes to be a little bit of a pain, but we know that it's worth it, and we've never had one incident.
Now, we'll just talk about some of those routine things that go along with having pets. Oh, I got to go potty. What do you do for that? Does Amber have accidents? Gus have accidents there in the hospital?
No. Usually the people who bring their dogs in and have worked with them and gone through training know their dogs well. And, of course, they're toileted before they come in, hopefully. But the dogs do get 1 to 2 breaks, and they work no longer than 2 hours. And they may see several people. But if a dog looks like it's getting a little nervous or is looking to a door or something, it's very easy. We just take the dog outside and let them do whatever and bring them right back.
What kind of patients do Gus and Amber work with? Are they children, adults?
Saddleback Hospital is very close to Leisure World, and most of the children here go to the
And what is Leisure World?
Facility. Leisure World is a community of senior citizens. And so we work mostly with patients who have had brain injury, spinal cord injury, joint replacements, and strokes are the four major areas that we work with. So we sometimes get people that are not senior, but the acute rehab unit where we work is a very good one, and people do go there for their therapies. And so we see mostly those people.
So in rehab, you have these people who are specially trained to do the exercises, to get these people out of their wheelchair, to get them walking. Why do you think that a dog has a better chance of getting these people to sometimes exercise than the person who is trying to, you know, cajole them into moving?
Right. Well, I almost think it's magic sometimes, because we have had patients that it hurts to do physical therapy, and so they really do have to be cajoled, and they don't want to do it, and they don't want to get out of bed, but we have said, come into a room and say, look, we brought the dog in, and how about walking the dog down the hall for just a little while? He'd really like to go, and they'll just do it. They'll do it for the dog, and I think the dog, you know, just looks like he's ready to go, and it's just a magical thing that happens. They also talk to the dogs, and they don't sometimes talk to their families. And they'll say, oh, this is a boring day for me, you know, and they're telling the dog, and you just made me feel so good. Of course, the dog loves to hear it, so it's kind of a magic thing.
Now, you mentioned that you have Tibetan Terriers. They're smallish dogs. Have you seen through your work other sizes of dogs, other species of animals being used as therapy?
Yes, when I've seen at Saddleback, although they don't have them now, but I've seen a parrot and a cat, actually. But the size of the dog doesn't really matter, as long as the dog has the personality. Of course, we can't put a German Shepherd on a bed with a patient, but there are things you can do, put them on a chair, put the patient on a chair, and so there's really no size or breed limit that I could see. As long as the dog is outgoing to the patient, we're fine.
So what's the personality? Again, everyone, as I mentioned at the top, mm-hmm. everyone thinks, my pet is so good. Right. What are those characteristics that you're looking for in a potential therapy dog or cat?
Okay. The dog, besides having the basic requirements that they need to get in, their personality has to be one. They have to be friendly and outgoing without being overly exuberant. So you want the dog to be able to be comfortable but in control. So if you see a patient, the dog just can't go running over and jumping and hello, hello, or lick their face or their hands. The dog is basically working, but if their owner or handler says, go say hello, the dog will slowly approach the patient and be very happy to sit there and be touched and maybe shake hands or pause, depending on what the patient can do, without being in your face or pushy. And that goes with visiting patients or actually working with therapists and patients.
With your dog or cat that seems to have this right personality, what type of training? Is it very involved, very time-consuming?
Well, It depends on the dog, but at Saddleback, we have our own program, which is very unique. But the dog must have quite a bit of obedience training to begin with. And we've had people start, you know, with puppy and go on, and they have to be able to pass the different stages of obedience training. And they also need to have a certificate of good citizen from the American Kennel Club. And that tests all different types of being able to be approached and touched, and it introduces a dog to a walker and things like that. And then when they've done that, then they come into the unit and train for about 6 hours, which is about three different times, getting used to the hospital, seeing how the best way for this dog to approach the patient is. Can the dog, is the dog comfortable with retrieving several times? How long can the dog sit and stay on the bed? And we train that, give the dog opportunities to do that. Also, they have to be able to sit still for a picture at Saddleback, which sometimes is a little hairy because they do eventually become hams, eventually. But some dogs are a little nervous about the camera. But once they've accomplished that, and it takes a while, they're...
Why do they need to have their picture taken?
We leave the patient with a picture of the patient and the dog in a little card that says, thanks for a great visit, and it's kind of like a souvenir. Huh. And it's done with a Polaroid, now we're going to have to change that soon, but it's done with a Polaroid, and they have a picture, and patients put them up on the wall and take them home.
That's marvelous. I can imagine it has to be rather disconcerting for a dog who probably has never seen a wheelchair or an IV stand or these things that rattle and move, and how to get your tail out of the way so it doesn't get run over by a wheelchair.
Right.
How were your dogs when they first saw these things? Were they just took right to it, or did it take a little bit of work?
Yeah, they seem to be fairly comfortable, and obedience training helps a lot, because if you expose your dog to a lot of different things, they're a little more comfortable going into different situations. And if they're slightly uncomfortable, you could make them sit and stay with you, and they're pretty sure that nothing's going to happen to them. I had one dog that loved tennis balls, and on walkers, they put tennis balls on the feet area, and so the first time she went in, she went right over and tried to chew on the tennis ball because it was right there. So
it's a tennis ball, Mom. Why can't I chew on
it? That's right. So we kind of had a train. You can play with it over here. And what is remarkable is that when the dogs go into the hospital setting, they know they're working. So they know it's different from out in the yard and out in the playground or out in their home. And it's just something that happens. They know what is expected of them, and the ones who enjoy it just do it and have a great time.
What are some of the hassles of working within the guidelines of the hospital or the therapy pet organization?
Well, the biggest hassle, although it's needed, is the infectious disease control people, because, you know, we're always being watched. The dog has to be very, very clean going into the hospital, so it needs a bath within 48 hours. It needs its nails trimmed and filed, teeth brushed, ears clean, you know, no odor, no parasites, internal or external. When we do go in, we still have to wash the patient's hands before and after the visit. We use towels and things like that, and it gets to be cumbersome. That's why we have a team of three, the owner of the dog, and a helper. And so that's a bit of a pain, and then we're always, of course, nervous. And there are areas in the hospital that we are not allowed to go into, unfortunately. We get asked by people, can you please come in and visit my mother? She's in the third floor, and we can't go. And that kind of upsets us, but infectious disease just says, no, you're not going there. And so,
what kind of areas is the third floor? Is it post-surgical or ICU?
It's a medical surgical unit. And the strange thing is, at one point, we were able to go into this one area, and the hospitals are just getting so particular and so careful, and maybe lawsuit, you know, crazy, that they really are not taking any risk at all. However, again, I have not yet heard anything, even locally, where there was an incident with a patient and a dog.
For all of this hassles that you're going through of keeping everything so clean, and your dogs, yes, are immaculately clean all the time, what do you get out of getting involved in this program?
Oh, gosh, it is so rewarding, and it's heart-touching a lot, and we get enthusiastic because when we see patients who won't do something for the dog, it's a wonderful feeling, and I'm very proud that my dogs can do that, and that's a great thing, and I think the dogs are proud of themselves, so it's just a happy thing that goes on in a place that maybe not always so comfortable, and it's a rewarding feeling. We just enjoy it a lot.
So you really do think that your dogs get something from being a therapy dog? They know when they're going to work, for instance? Do they kind of go, "Woo, hey, we're going"?
Yes, as soon as we have uniforms, the dog has a uniform, has a bandana that matches my jacket. As soon as I take these things out, in fact, my dogs know that when they get a bath about once a month, we go in about once a month, that when they get a bath that something's up, like, yeah, we're going to go. And then when these things come out, they get all excited. And if I have to go to the hospital for a meeting and not be able to take them, they're not real happy when I lose them. So they do enjoy it a lot. And they get a lot of good feedback. I mean, people love to see them come in. The doctors and the staff in the hospital basically are like a secondary high to the program, because we're there for the patients. But when we walk in, all the staff knows the names of all the dogs, may not know the names of the volunteers that are with the dogs, but knows the dogs' names. And there's a lot of touching and sitting down on the floor with the dogs, and the dogs relieve the stress from the staff. So the dogs are very welcomed, and they enjoy it.
It sounds like this is definitely a win-win situation for everyone involved. Would you recommend that listeners become involved in pet therapy, and how would they go about doing so if they don't live here in Orange County?
Well, I would think that they might first check with their local hospitals, and also nursing home and care facilities also need these dogs to go in. They might want to check locally to see if there's programs in these areas, and a lot of different hospitals, even though we have several hospitals in Orange County, they all have different requirements. So I would say get your dog started into an obedience class. And
you mentioned AKC, but they don't have to be AKC registered dogs, correct?
No, they don't have to be AKC. They just need a good citizen certificate, a CGC, certificate of good citizen. And usually dog obedience schools have a class that you go twice, and then they have the test there. So they're not that difficult to find. And there are also groups like Delta that you could get in touch with, and they also give programs on pet therapy, and you can get your dog involved through them. And also Therapy Dogs International does it as well.
A lot of great information. So, Corrine, thank you so much for being a marvelous pet owner, wonderful client, and a great owner of some therapy dogs. I do appreciate it. So you've been listening today to The Pet Doctor. This is Dr. Bernadine Cruz, and hopefully next week when you listen, you'll get more information on how you can be the best possible pet owner. Thank you so much, and Corrine, thank you again.
Pets can be a wonderful addition to your life. Keeping them healthy and happy is important. Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor with veterinary media consultant and veterinarian Dr. Bernadine Cruz. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile, or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets. The Pet Doctor, on demand every week, only on PetLifeRadio.com.